You're plugged into the voice of the oil patch. This is the BOE Report Podcast.
Welcome to the BOE Report Podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure everybody's at home right now, or certainly not at the office. I'm sure everybody's at home right now. I'm Josh Groberman. I publish the BOE Report. I'm joined by Terry Edom.
Hello, and I'm not at home. For mea culpa.
He's not at home. He's the only guy in the world downtown Calgary right now.
Which I'm in isolation downtown.
He's in isolation in downtown. It's a good place to isolate. Our editor, Michael Hibbs.
Hello. Hello.
And Mike Kroon.
Oh, as always. Hello.
I guess we wanted to bring this back because this is probably...
It's been about 4 years,
It's been
honest.
A long time, but it's
been
probably,
a while.
It's probably a good time to do this now.
Yeah, let's bring it back. Let's do it.
This is unbelievable, Terry.
Starting right at the bottom. Good time to reintroduce it, I guess. Only can go up from here, I think.
Yeah, well,
I think. I always keep saying
well,
that.
Well, we're looking right now, today, March 18th, $6.20 a barrel for Western Canadian Select.
Is that right? Wow. I'm glad I didn't look.
It's still continuing to drop, by the way. We'll have to check in over the course of the podcast.
It's down 50% today. So, and I was saying earlier, but the differential is worth three times as much, almost, as the price of heavy oil in Alberta.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
It goes with all portfolios and exchanges, too, I guess. So, everything is just free fall.
It's unbelievable. So, just a couple hours ago, our wonderful finance minister... I say that with the maximum degree of sarcasm. Bill Morneau announced various economic stimulus programs. In the States, they're going to give everybody, it looks like, $2,000 and small business money, delayed payments on as much as they can do. Up here, we got all these different programs. Terry, did you hear what Bill Morneau announced he's going to do for the oil industry?
No, I didn't. But let me guess, not a lot.
You're not going to believe... No, he's going to do something.
Is he?
Oh. You're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this.
Okay, hit me.
They're going to give oil and gas workers in Alberta a significant investment in the cleanup of orphan wells. They're giving money to the Orphan Well Fund right now.
It's about the only thing they could do in their playbook, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like whatever they can do to further retire the oil industry, I guess, eh?
I suppose it. I'm
mind blown. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But what else did we really expect from these guys?
Well, that's why I don't pay any attention. It didn't mean anything. So, yeah, it's things are so bad, especially on the federal level. Like, I mean, I'm just glad they didn't slap a tariff on to clean up the environment while this is all going on. So, I don't know.
The Jason Kenney needs to curtail Alberta production.
Could be, yeah, yeah.
I don't see why. I mean, if there's an extra, you know, it wouldn't close the gap, the $15 gap. But if it closed it by $5 a barrel, isn't that worth it?
Right.
Like if it doubled the price of oil, the price of oil, that's worth shutting in half the production in Alberta, basically.
We can't count on the Canadian dollar going down indefinitely, so.
No.
Although it's doing a good job of that, but.
It's going down 68 cents, but that's not enough. So how have you been like consuming this, Terry?
Just in stunned disbelief, I guess, the whole thing. Well, coronavirus was one thing, and it's hard to say whether they're doing the optimal things. There's not a great playbook for this kind of thing because I think it's different than past ones a little bit. So they're trying to isolate it, which is good. The cost looks like it's the world economy, and I guess at some point they're going to have to decide how far they want to go down that road. So that's...
Yeah, there's a great article in Town Hall. There'll be a link on the BOE Report page here below this podcast. But there's a great article in townhall.com. Dennis Prager wrote it. about how he's the remedy may be worse than the disease.
That's what it seems like to me. You're shutting down so much of the all sorts of industries, spin-offs. That's why I don't even like going in the news. You see some new sub-industry that's shutting down that I don't even know why. LNG Canada laid off half their workforce. It's just that everybody's closing everything down. And ideally, to me, it would make more sense, or at some point you would look after the people who are most at risk. And the money that's being flushed down the toilet by doing all of this, you could spend a fortune to keep them in good hands, or isolate them, or put them in luxury hotels with guards. I think just because the cost to the overall economies is just going to be off the charts here. So,
yeah, and I think when I was thinking back about it, it was the because I don't think, and Michael and Mike know a lot more than I do, but I don't think that the worry is not so much about the severity of the disease in terms of its kind of fatality rate.
Right.
Although it is higher than the common flu.
Mm-hmm. Very much higher, yeah.
Well, I don't know how much higher that is.
Okay.
Well, what does it say? Well, I don't know. What is it? Do you
It's oddly higher. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. Compared to, like, what is the fatality rate on the normal flu?
Well, I would venture to say they probably have a damn good idea what the exact fatality rate is on the common flu.
Well, it's so strange. Like, if you look at
years and years of data on that, right?
Yeah, but it's not consistent. They're like Italy's fatality rate is like 10%, and Germany's is like 0.1% or something. So,
right.
Italy's
the oldest. Yeah, Italy's the oldest country in Europe.
Okay, so
but,
yeah,
which is one part of it. But the other part of it is the biggest question I have is, I believe that I was telling Mike and Michael this earlier. I think that the number of deaths is very accurate. I think everybody that dies because of coronavirus, we know why they died, right? I don't think we're misreporting or underreporting the number of deaths associated with it. But how many people actually have got the thing? Because the total number of cases, 200,000 worldwide, that could be a tenth of what it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it probably is, especially in places with low amounts of testing like the United States and...
Right.
Like, yeah.
So if it's maybe, we'll say four times deadly, and that is huge, by the way. Four times as deadly as the flu is huge. Two times as deadly is huge. But I think what the concern here that everybody was kind of having is overwhelming the healthcare systems.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's why there's been all this talk of flattening the curve, and that's why we're all,
right,
you know, maybe in it for the long term, looking into the summer potentially.
Right.
So
and how much, what could, if we had a proper economy going and all of this trillions and trillions of dollars, what could we do to hospitals?
Yeah. The part that I don't understand is if you flatten the curve, and I totally, that makes total sense, especially if I was involved in healthcare admin, but you're going to flatten it to a certain extent, and then what does it, like, do you flatten the curve until a third of the population has had it, and then do you not care anymore, or do you wait until it's 80%? Like that, if you follow that reasoning farther out, it kind of, I don't know where that ends up. Cause that
just until you see cases start like a reduction in new cases per day. Right. And then when that remains like a consistent trend,
right,
then
but
you
if,
could start to reevaluate.
Yeah. But then it depends on how mobile the disease is, or how easily it is to be transmitted. So like if we get down, like if we stop growing and we reduce, so let's say Canada goes down to 200 active cases, then can you really relax, or will that just accelerate again as soon as people start acting like they did before? And that's the part that I don't understand. Do you need to wipe it out to a certain level? It looks like China has done that. And is it just the increased precautions that they're taking, which is keeping it from reigniting? That's the part I don't understand. So, but hopefully we can follow their path, because it really wasn't that long for them. This only started there in December.
Well,
right?
I think
so,
South Korea would be the country to look at.
Yeah.
Because their active cases are going down. Their daily new cases is, you know, less than 50, which is really, really low for a country that size. And they seem to have done. So whatever they're doing seems to be the course that we should be taking.
Right. But if it takes a lockdown to keep those numbers there, like if you say,
yeah, like,
okay, everybody
is
downtown again.
How, yeah. What's, but how long? That's what I'm wondering. Like, what's the threshold for this? I mean, I think the big worry is that everybody locks down for a month. Everybody tries to go back to normal, I guess. One person still has it. Everybody starts getting it again. And then you got to go, we got to do this again? Like, yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah,
so the whole thing's unbelievable.
And then on top of this, like, it's not only the coronavirus that's impacting the oil prices, it's Saudi Arabian oil production. And that also, you have no idea when they're going to be able to resolve their dispute with Russia.
Right, right.
I am shocked this hasn't been settled yet, by the way.
Oh.
Because I was of the opinion, Terry, that I would have assumed that Saudi Arabia and Russia would have called up Exxon, Shell, Chevron, whoever, and say, hey, if you want us to pull back and fix this thing, you guys are not going to put another penny into the U.S. for a while.
That would have been smart. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And I don't know why Exxon or Chevron, those guys wouldn't agree to something like that either.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe they just decided to do that without talking to anyone. I think that this is going to last on the oil side, which is just another black cloud that everyone here in the industry can't get away from. But at least from that, I can kind of understand where that might go, because they will have to end it at some point. But and I think they will once they've done enough damage that they're confident that they've made a difference this time. The last time they tried this, it didn't. In 2014, it was more benign, which is what I wrote about. They did a much softer version. They increased their production a bit, and they kind of made some noise about how they're not going to support prices. Here, they came out with a hammer, and they did it like very quickly and very aggressively. And they did it at the worst possible time, because nobody knows where global demand is going to wind up for oil. Like, it's in free fall, right? Like, if you cancel cruise ships, that's one thing, and airlines, it's another, and all of these other things. Where's the demand for oil going to go? So I don't think anybody even knows where the bottom is. China set a bit of a benchmark. I think they were off 4 million barrels a day, but they were able to contain it quickly. And if it's not contained in the rest of the world, who knows? So I think that it looked like a very concerted effort by those two. And I would think that, I'm sure that it wasn't that many years ago, people talked about, there's a lot of speculation that Saudi Arabia needed $50 or $70 oil. I can't remember the number, but to balance their budget. We're not any better off now. They've actually embarked on some incredibly large infrastructure projects. So they actually, I'm sure their budget break even is even higher. So they're not going to be really, no matter what they say, they're not going to be happy with this price for very long. But I think once they can see some real casualties on the battlefield, then they'll let up, as will Russia. Russia is just a different beast. They don't really answer to anyone, and they can do whatever they want, and they probably wouldn't shy away from running their own economy down if they had to win the bigger war. So, but Saudi Arabia, I think, will go back to the table.
There was actually a really good video on Bloomberg. I'll send it to you. Basically, there was an analyst saying that the perfect scenario for Russia and Saudi Arabia would be to create a number of zombie companies in the United States, like we have a lot of them here in Canada, where their debts are so high that they can't afford any new capital or projects. They can basically just afford to hold on. Because if they drive companies into receivership in the United States, there might be new, well-capitalized companies to take them on, you know, give them a bit of life eventually. So just try to kick companies and get them down, basically, so they're in almost a zombie state.
Well, I think you're onto something there, and I think that's something that the Saudis and the Russians are way smarter than me when it comes to any of this stuff. But it's obvious that if a company goes into receivership, that doesn't mean their production goes away. And if it goes to someone else who's better capitalized, then maybe they could even accelerate it by drilling on the takeover company's better prospects. So I think that what they really needed to do was not just create bankruptcies, but to hack everybody's capital budgets, which is what they've done here. So
yeah, it's tough to say how long this could sort of persist.
It is, yeah.
Like, a week is an extremely long time, in my opinion.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it'll be months, but a couple of months.
No, I mean, I think it'll stay depressed, but I mean at $20, you know what I mean? That's kind of a bit, there's a difference. There really is, when you get these this low, the difference between $20 and $25 is kind of like the difference between like $40 and $55, right?
It's everybody's margin from profitability when you're producing.
Yeah, so. And nobody can really produce at $20 a barrel. And you're right about Saudi Arabia. They do need $80 oil, and so and Russia needs high oil as well.
They do too.
The difference between the two is I believe Saudi's operating costs, the cost to produce a barrel of oil for Saudi Arabia is the lowest in the world. But they need it for their budget because they don't have taxes or anything, right?
Right, and they're worried about people revolting. Whereas it's like a China thing too. Like they have to keep a population in control. And they do that with money, and China does it with a lot of other means. But Russia's not that concerned about uprisings. They have ways to deal with that, it seems like.
Yes.
Do you think that, considering they have the lowest cost, that they could just hold in here for the long term, completely destroy everyone else's industries, and then scoop it all back up in 6 months or a year? You know, at significant losses to themselves, but then their market share would increase drastically afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's a reasonable play for them? Or
I don't know if I would agree with or think along the lines of scooping it up, but I do think that they just
I think he means just by growing
destroy the
market
economics.
Share.
Yeah. By market share. Yeah, that's what I would agree. So the U.S. shale model has been sort of broken for a long time. If you look at these companies' share prices, particularly anybody that has any gas involved. Like there's a lot of these companies have had share prices, especially the gassier ones, that would be $50-$60, and they're like $3 or $4, and they're now even worse after this collapse here. So their access to capital has been depleted because that model just doesn't work. That these high decline wells, you need exceptionally high prices. Like they've made it work for a long time, but they've tapped all their credit facilities. Like Chesapeake is a prime example. Some of the best acreage, they have some of the best gas. Shale gas acreage anywhere. They have good oil properties and good prospects, lots of good land, and they're just going right into the ground, and that's just going to be accelerated now. So I think that in 2015 when they tried this, they thought that it would put a damper on things, and it did a little bit, but then it just bounced back because people started drilling longer laterals and they found new technological breakthroughs, and they just kept going. They just loaded up the debt, and a lot of them raised equity in that time too. And now that's gone. They can't raise equity anymore. The debt markets aren't very friendly. And
well, that's the other part of this, Terry, like the banks. I bet, you know, in Canada, I don't know the exact number. I bet you the banks here hold north of $150 billion of debt, which is huge. And that's just here. You know, in the US, that number could be $500-700 billion. So when the financial institutions will start to get involved in this, and that'll sort of change the game a lot. Because I can't imagine the banks are just sitting back and watching $20 a barrel oil and are okay with this even a little bit.
No, I'm sure that there's a lot of consternation there for sure. I think the saddest part about that is that it just starts at the bottom and works its way up the food chain. I don't think anybody's worried about CNRL's debt or Suncor's, although their rates have probably gone up. It's probably less favorable than some other industries. But the sad part is that it's all going to be all the lower guys down the totem pole that get wiped out. And we've already lost pretty much all of our junior industry, except for Barrel Oil is the only company I know of that started in a long time.
An Outlier Resources.
That's 5 years old already. There's just no junior market. There's no money that'll come to Canada. And that was true for tiny companies. And now it'll be true for heading into the mid-sized companies too. So that just part of the industry looks like it's just going to go away until things change a lot. And I don't know when that is. So.
Yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, it's going to take at least a couple of weeks.
Well,
I'm shocked at how we're just sitting back and basically everybody's accepted that we're going to destroy the world economy.
Yeah, that part is surprising me. Yep.
And none of this matters. Like, it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't. Like, if Trump says that he'll give $2 trillion.
Oh, the help doesn't matter. Really, I agree. Yeah. Well,
it doesn't matter. There's no stimulus. They might as well not even do it.
Yeah. Well, what would they? I did see something this morning. Some U.S. restaurant industry was asking for like $55 billion of help or something, in addition to everybody else. Like the airlines are looking for the same. Trump said he won't let Boeing go down. This spinoff is all over the place. Even like auto sales. Like what's going to happen to those? To that industry, like China's sales went down by 90%, I think, in January and February, something like that. So if that happens here, who's out shopping for a car these days? Like, who would even dream of that? Or appliances?
There might have to be some massive reset button that the world collectively and say everybody's debt's forgiven or something.
Well, yeah, the governments are so far in debt now already. Like, they're starting this game with no ammunition. So it really is just a warped time. It's very sad.
This is completely different. And I don't know the unemployment rate unless this thing gets solved quickly, or they just accept that this is going to be a bad flu season or whatever the hell they want to say. I don't see how the unemployment rate will not push over 25-30%, whatever the hell it has to go to.
Yeah, temporarily, that's for sure.
Nobody's doing anything.
Yeah. Well, just the restaurant business alone and bars and whatever else.
It's been 1 week. It's been 1 week, and it's 60 cents a liter at the gas station. 1 week. Nobody can hold on. And most of these companies, most businesses in general, if they ceased operations but still had to pay everybody, couldn't last for more than a month. And that's most businesses.
Business model doesn't work. So.
Yeah, but that's most businesses. Like which companies around were lucky enough to have, you know, cash and no debt and low costs to survive?
Pretty few. Well, and everyone takes everything for granted when it hums along, and that's the biggest problem with governments too, is that they spent years worrying about less relevant things and taking everything for granted like it would just always be there. Yeah. And so this is an ultimate wake-up call in one sense, just that maybe we shouldn't take all this stuff for granted.
Well, here's the other horrible thing to think about. Does Enbridge want to finish, or does Kinder Morgan, I guess Trans Mountain's owned by the government, so it should get built. But do any of these guys want to build new pipelines now?
Yeah, that's a good question.
That's how bad it's gone.
That's a good question, yeah. Well, there'll be demand destruction, there'll be production destruction, and then we'll have to see where this all shakes out. So it's it could roar back. Like, one of the weirdest parts about the past few years has been the lowering of interest rates around the world, where they've gone to ridiculously low levels or negative in a lot of countries or Europe. And so all of that money got flushed into the stock market because there's so much money that needs yield. Like, pension funds need yield, or they just don't work. They need to have a certain rate of return. Banks need to invest their money and make money at it. And so interest rates got pushed so low that a lot of money, wherever it could, went flying into the stock market and buying up anything that paid a dividend. Now, when this smooths out again, all that money that's coming out of the stock market, or a lot of it, is going right into debt too, which has pushed like U.S. Interest rates way, way down to record lows. So if this smooths out and all that money comes out of those debt instruments, maybe it goes back into the stock market, maybe it goes back into business. It's hard to say, but it could be a big.
Yeah, it could. You're right.
It could be huge when it comes back.
Could. Yeah, if everybody gets a handle on things in basically in 2 weeks. You know, everybody's kind of on the same trajectory where South Korea kind of did.
Yeah. If the lockdowns work and we do control this thing, like you guys are speculating, if it works like South Korea, like, that'd be just the best thing ever. And if we see some signs of that, then maybe things will kind of come back fairly quickly, because everyone will go back to work at some point. Either they're going to kill off the global economy here, or they're going to come to some sort of compromise where they're going to say, well, look, we can't have 150 million people in North America unemployed. We have to do something to get them back to work. So when we get there, and if things stabilize, there's another factor too, which is just compounding everyone's misery, which is the wealth effect, which economists like to talk about. When people's portfolios and their net worth is going up, they feel better, they spend more, they're more active in the economy. And now it's the exact opposite. Now everybody, if they dare to look at their RSP or whatever, their stock holdings, that they don't want to, but if they do, then you just feel sick, right? You've lost half your money or whatever. So that's psychologically hard on people too, and so they just withdraw even further. It's like the new car thing. Like I said, I don't know who would think of going out and buying a new car these days.
No, well, if car prices came down the way gasoline prices.
Oh yeah, yeah, and well, maybe there'll be some deals. I mean, yeah,
yeah, it's gonna take stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, and maybe that would have been a better way to deal with this. Is they say, you know, anybody wants to buy something, we're going to subsidize it.
Right. And maybe there will be like the mother of all incentives when this comes back to get people going again, to get people traveling again, to get people. Because I think, believe it or not, we probably have it better off here than a lot of places. Imagine a place that's totally reliant on tourism. Like, what are they going to do?
Nope, that's a good point. This will reshape the way people think about globalization and all that too.
Yeah, probably.
And
yep.
And also, like, you know, high population density, which everybody, you know, our mayor and other people love to scream about. Not so sure it's a good idea now, but
that's true. Maybe this will. People have never seen anything like this. So.
Can. Well, I don't think packing people in a sardine can is a very good idea.
That's true. There could be a cost to it for sure.
Yeah. So no, just lots of stuff to think about either way. So the next little while, I guess your business and everything, you're just kind of batting it down the hatches and.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I work for a little natural gas producer. So sadly we've been kind of used to this world for a while, and natural gas prices, aren't cratering to the extent that oil was. They're down for sure, but.
And it won't. It won't.
Yeah.
I don't think it will.
There's a bit of hope for natural gas, just as I think there's hope for oil too. But natural gas production will get curtailed here as the U.S. shale drilling slows down, which could bring prices back. So associated gas will fall, and then maybe we'll get some reasonable prices for gas again. And for us, like what was considered a poor price 2 years ago would look like heaven now. So that might work. We're just hunkering down through this.
Yeah, I think the big things that need to happen with oil is there just has to be a sort of concerted effort by everybody to cut back.
Yep. You're right. There should be no wealth.
I just don't understand why Alberta wouldn't curtail the oil production here.
Yeah. It's going to happen a bit voluntarily, but companies are just reluctant to do it. So, yeah.
They are reluctant to do it. The one I just don't understand, Terry, is the oil sands. Like the mining I'm talking about the mining operation.
Dial
the SAG-D
that back.
Stuff is, yeah, the SAG-D stuff is hard because you turn it off, it's hard to bring it back on the way it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But the oil sands, you just take a few less scoops out of the ground.
Yeah, I'm not sure what their cost structures are like. That makes sense.
If there's an issue with a curtailment, Kenny can say, okay, well, don't produce, you know, a few hundred thousand barrels a day, and we'll give you $3 million a day, $10 a barrel right now.
That's what I would like to see, is something creative come up. I mean, not that I want to see governments bail out everything, but they're going to be spending a fortune anyway, so let's do it in a smart way. So
yeah, there's no reason why, if they curtail production here another 10%, the revenues would double.
Yeah, it happened last time. So
it makes no sense. It happened last time, and there's still room there. I don't buy this thing that there's no room for the curtailments to. I don't buy that.
No, they just quit them not that long ago. So,
right? Yeah. Well, they're still transporting crude oil on trains.
What a cheery topic to start podcasting on.
Well, we'll probably
the next ones will be happier.
I think we'll do more of these. The next one should be better, right?
Okay,
well, hopefully,
yeah.
we'll talk in a week and we'll feel a little bit better.
Yep.
Maybe I'll even be downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope.
You really think there's a chance you'll be downtown?
I don't know. Nobody else is, so maybe it's not a bad time to go.
Yeah, now it's safe. Yeah,
yeah, there's nobody there. Nobody here, exactly.
Oh, yeah, it's nobody's there. All right, well, thank you for joining us.
All right, yeah, it's a pleasure.
All right.